Welcome to Python Map Automation, Advanced ArcPy Mapping, and Migration to ArcGIS Pro. Wow, what a mouthful. We never actually called it Advanced ArcPy Mapping before, because I don't think there's really anything advanced about ArcPy Mapping, but it didn't fit. So we used to have Beyond the Basics of ArcPy Mapping, but that didn't fit, so we had to go with Advanced. So Jeff and I are going to bounce back and forth between a potpourri of topics. I'm going to start off just kind of getting you thinking about ArcPy mapping and some of the beyond the basics things that you can do with it to achieve some many common tasks that people want to get done. Then we're going to bounce over to Jeff, and he's going to talk about Python or using ArcPy mapping to do web map printing. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about ArcPy mapping or ArcPy MP in ArcGIS Pro and look at that a little bit. And then Jeff will talk about updating data sources in a completely different way. So anyway, I'm Jeff Barrett and this is Jeff Molds. We're both product engineers. I'm from Olympia, Washington. Jeff is in Redlands, California. We work on several teams. We work on the layout team. So everything that involves a layout in ArcMap or in ArcGIS Pro, we're with that team of people. There are about six or seven of us. We also do a lot of the ArcPy mapping work. Almost exclusively, Jeff and I and another developer do that work. We also work on the .NET SDK for a Pro. Anyway, we do a lot of things. And everything that we do has a lot to do with working with layouts and automating layouts. What I want to talk about is, very briefly, is this one URL. EsriURL.com, 8899, will bring you to an ArcGIS Online page that allows you to download a lot of samples that we've put together. And these samples are really, really good samples. They've downloaded quite a bit. And they help you get around some common problems with what you may want to do inside of a layout inside of ArcMap. So I'm going to just click on this. Again, it's http://esriurl.com/8899. And when you get to this page, oftentimes what happens is it looks like this. It says, "Why don't I see any items?" And it's because you're not seeing the desktop content. So we have a bunch of zip files, and by default, those don't show up. And so I'm just going to check show ArcGIS desktop content, and voila, here we have several different applications that you can download, install, and like any developer, it's easier to modify someone else's code than start from scratch, and really that's what this is all about. There's some good stuff, and I have a few slides just to cover a couple of these, but please take the time and review their summaries. All of these come with complete README files that kind of give you the whole idea behind the project and what it's trying to accomplish. So let me just show you a couple of these. There's no way to crack these open and start scrolling through their code. It's just way too much. So let me just explain to you conceptually what these things are doing, and I think you're going to find that they're very helpful. How many of you work with map series, right, where you have a series of pages? Have you ever had the need to have dynamic tables going from one page to the next page to the next page? Right now in ArcMap, you can insert a layout into you can insert a table into a layout, but it's not dynamic in any way. So we don't have that ability, and so the ArcPy mapping team decided to kind of create a sample that simulates dynamic tables inside of a layout. So if you look at Alaska, for example, you see a dynamic table or a table with four records in it in the middle there, in the lower center. And then when we go over to Pennsylvania, you'll notice that things look a little more squished. And with Alaska, it's just using the default row height, and it's just printing those table records right to the page. But over at Pennsylvania, there are way too many records, and so it kind of proportionally scaled everything to fit within a defined area on the layout. And all of this was done using those four graphics on the upper left-hand corner. We have a horizontal line, a vertical line, and two different styled text elements. One is the header, which shows the field names, and the other is simply the cell values. And using ArcPy mapping and using the ability to clone graphic elements, whether they be line elements or text elements, we can just use very simple math to go in and generate all of the appropriate number of horizontal lines and vertical lines and text to generate each table. And as you go to the next page, it just generates the next one. And it's very, very fast and very easy, and it's the closest thing we have to dynamic tables inside of desktop software, with the exception of the production mapping extension. They do have the capability to create dynamic tables in a map series. But we did it without an extension using ArcPy mapping. Another really a really nice example that a lot of people want to be able to get around is managing multiple data frames or a variable number of data frames on a layout. And this came to us from, or I first started on this project, it was helping a customer that was, they had 320 maps, 320 MXDs, and the reason why they had to manage individual maps for each of the jurisdictions was because they had a different number of inset maps depending on the amount of detail in that particular jurisdiction. So sometimes they may have only had one inset map, other times they had three and up to six inset maps. And they also had these reports, tabular information that was also printed on this very large format. It was, I think, 36 by 24 or something. And so if something changed, if they wanted to add a new layer or symbolize something differently, they had to go to 320 map documents and make that change. It drove them crazy. So what we did is we did it all with just one map document. And I asked them some simple questions. Well, how many inset maps? What's the maximum number of inset maps you'll ever have? And they said six. I was like, well, that's doable. At least they didn't say 100. And I asked him a few other questions about this tabular data and why does it need to move around. Well, it needs to move around because the shape of the main jurisdiction changes. And so when it's shaped this way, we're going to put information here. And when it's shaped this way, we're going to put information, over here. So the data is constantly changing. So the way to solve this is we put everything inside of a database table. So let me just try and go through this. Down below, you see a table. Well, first, up above, you see two examples in the download that you can play with. One has six inset maps. They're placed at different locations on the layout. And the other one has eight inset maps. They're all the same size, but they're slightly smaller than the other ones on the left side. And this one over here has a slightly larger inset map. It was just scaled differently. And it fit nicely around the data. So the way we accomplish this is we have a table we create called Page Layout Elements. And of course, we have all the unique names. And we have this first field called Main Data Frame. And that main data frame stores nine values. It stores the four XY coordinates in page space, the four XY coordinates in map space, and then the very last or the ninth value is scale. And so what happens is when they run the script tool and they pick, let's say, Mid-Atlantic, it's going to read all these values here and set up that data frame on the layout in that position at that scale. Then after setting up the main data frame, what it does is it just marches along and it goes from one inset to the next. If the inset for that particular record has a value, then it pulls that data frame off the side of the page, places it using those nine values. It goes to the next one, the next one, the next one. If the inset is null, if the inset value is null, for example, like you can see in the table, it just leaves the inset off the page. And then the very, very last column here is title and north arrow. Now, they had other columns like report 1, report 2, report 3, etc. But all we're simply doing is we're placing the north arrow and the title at different locations. So as we go from page to page, We can just call it up, recreate it, without having to store separate MXDs. So many people run into this. Once you start talking to people and talking about data-driven pages and talking about going from one page to the next, there's always these what-if scenarios. What if I could have another data frame? Or what if I could rearrange the location of items so that they fit better on the page? This is a really, really, really nice technique. Now, what's nice about this sample, tutorial, whatever you call it, that you download, we actually challenge you to create the next two regions. We only do the first, I don't know, 8 of the 10 regions or whatever it is. We want you to use this tool to actually set up the next two regions. And all I would simply need to do is zoom to that region, select a data frame, for example, stretch it, position it, move it anywhere on the page, resize it, and then we give you a little easy button. You press the easy button, and if the page doesn't already exist in this table, it creates a new record and enters all those values. So don't think that I went in there and typed in all those values. Right? So we have a script that creates the values, and we have a script that consumes the values to create your output. It's really, really a lot of fun. Another one that is very common and people often ask about, for those particularly that work with index pages, is they want to be able to create a gazetteer or a street index map, or pages, I'm sorry. So you can come over here and you can look at the page number and the tile number and you can find out where their street is on this particular page number. We can't do this with ArcMap out of the box. And so the way this was solved was using a third-party site package called ReportLab. And ReportLab is a PDF authoring tool that allows you to kind of design the look of a PDF. You can see some horizontal and vertical lines. Where's the page number placed? Where's the footers and the headers and that sort of stuff? And then what you do is, going through this tutorial, you kind of do a series of GIS overlays to create the information that gets represented in those columns. It's called flowable text. And you flow all of that information to the Python report image, and it just keeps creating pages until it runs out of information. So in this particular example, it generates 4 pages. And then what we do is we just take that result and we append that to the results of data-driven pages, and we have a map book. So this is another very popular download. So just a reminder, the URL for that is esriurl.com/8899. And don't forget that checkbox. I guarantee someone will send me an email saying, I can't find it. There's nothing there on that page. Okay, so now I'm going to bring it back to Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
What number are you?
Two? Yeah, I'm on. Okay. My name is Jeff Mould. I'm a product engineer working in Redlands. And most of the stuff you do with ArcPy.mapping, you could share on the server as geoprocessing services. And what I'm going to talk about today is, I don't know if everybody from the back or on the side, you could see this paper map here. I'm going to show you how to build a web app that will output a map like this. And for the people in the back or even in the front, it's actually, you know, large format, high DPI vector output. And we'll build a web app. And even if you're not interested in web apps and server, because I know we're mainly Python people here, we're going to do this all without doing anything except Python. We're not going to go into JavaScript or HTML or anything like that. So even if you're like a desktop person, you could probably see the value of spitting out PDFs like this for your users. And when you run this app to print this out, or at least export to PDF, it's only going to take a couple seconds to build something like this. So that's what we're going to talk about, is web map printing. So there are basically 3 development paths you could use for web map printing applications. And as you move from the left to the right on this slide here, the complexity increases somewhat based on the amount of code you have to write, but so does the functionality and control over your web app. Now, before we start customizing the web map printing with Python, I just want to briefly show you number one on the slide, which is what we call the out-of-the-box printing solution that doesn't require any coding, not even Python. So it's good to know what this does so that you don't reinvent the wheel. Now, if you have server, you will have the out-of-the-box printing service, and you could use it in the web app builder. And the web app builder is a fairly new product from ESRI, which is an easy way to create web apps without having to write any code. And the out-of-the-box printing service can also be used on ArcGIS.com and Portal. And if you want to learn more about the out-of-the-box printing service, I have some related tech sessions listed here, but most of them are probably past. There may be some web app builder stuff as well, but all the stuff's in the help, and you could probably get these slides afterwards. But we're here to talk about Python, and that's number two here. So this is using web app builder and a custom Python print service. And like I said, we're not going to go into the world of JavaScript or HTML. And I will briefly talk about the JavaScript API for people that are interested in that development path later on. So that brings us to the question of why use ArcPy.mapping in a printing app? Well, using Python allows you to do more advanced stuff in your web app. For example, you could swap out service layers for local vector data. You could export using custom options like large format output or high DPI output. You could export data-driven pages and like a map book, and then also insert in additional pages like a title page or a report. And ArcPy.mapping also gives you a bunch of methods and properties to change the legend in the output. Or you want to do anything else with ArcPy.mapping to the web app or the web map before printing or exporting. And your script would output a printer-friendly file, such as a PNG or a PDF. And usually when we talk about web map printing, we really mean export the PDF. You could use Python to send the PDF to a printer as well. Now, the Python script that does this is going to be shared as a service, and the web app is going to use this service in the same way that it uses the out-of-the-box printing service. And the Python script is going to use this function called convert web map to map document. And this function takes a web map that you intend to print or export and converts it to a map document. And once it's converted, the full state of the web map exists in the map document. So in the web app that I'm going to demo in a moment here, the end user will be able to navigate to an area of interest and then press a print button, or rather select from a list of custom large format layout templates and then press a print button. And what the Python script is going to do is replace all the service layers from the web app with local vector data. And so what are the advantages of using Python here? Now, if you look at the graphic on the left, we have two sample output PDFs. And the one on the far left and underneath shows a 96 DPI tiled cache service. And you could sort of see the jaggedness in the features and the pixelated text. And that may be okay for some situations, but what if you want to have really high quality cartographic output? The other one with the smiley face shows vector data, and it is much smoother and would be more appropriate for high quality output. Now, keep in mind, for all you server people out there, that the out-of-the-box print service will actually let you request a high DPI image from the cache map service's underlying data if your map service has dynamic layers enabled. And dynamic layers may look as good as vector, so keep dynamic layers in mind. However, if you want the end user to be able to turn layers on and off and view map coordinates or layer attributes in the actual output PDF, then vector is required. And that could be shown, that could be seen here in the graphic on the right. And one check mark is showing the table of contents control in Adobe Reader, where you can turn vector layers on and off. And the other check mark is showing Adobe's geospatial tool, where you could view coordinates. You could also, you also have the option of embedding attributes in the PDF so that users will actually be able to click on the PDF and have attributes pop up. And vector may also be quicker to print and export. So the vector layers, I keep talking about vector layers. You need to have these vector layers, and we're going to stage them in some templates. And this is for workflows involving your own map services and the vector data that you already have. It's not really about somehow converting the ArcGIS Esri base maps to vector. And like I've been saying, this print service is going to be a Python script. And let me just open up ArcGIS server here. I'll go to my server manager. And to save time, I've already shared my Python script as a service. And it's here called Austin Print. And in a minute, after I demo the web app, I'll show you the actual code here. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to use this GP service in the web app builder. And like I said, the web app builder is a easy way to build web apps without having to write any code. So here's the web app builder. This is my really simple web app for printing topo data. And I'm going to go to the Widgets tab here. And I'm going to scroll down. And you can see there's a print widget. And the print widget is part of the web app builder. And there's a configure button here. And you can see that I've already configured it to use my own print service. By default, it uses the, I believe it uses the out-of-the-box print service. But this URL is the same URL that I showed you in server. Now, the print widget is smart. It's designed to work with either the out-of-the-box print service or a custom print service, as long as the tool signature of your print service, your custom one, is the same as the out-of-the-box print service. So what do I mean by tool signature? By that, all I mean is that the parameter names are the same. Okay, so you could also see in the configuring the print widget here, I have this list of templates. So when I shared my Python script as a service, the layout template parameter had these custom large format templates that I authored myself, and the print widget picks them up. Okay, so let's run this app here. So to run it, I just click the launch button. And I'm just going to zoom in here. And here is the print button that I configured in Web App Builder. And I'm going to click it. And I'll choose a layout. I'll choose 26 by 28. Now, the print widget also has these useful advanced options, like preserving map scale or map extent, or outputting to an exact scale. Like, for example, you could force the scale to be 1 to 50,000 or something like that. And I'm going to hit print here. And while this is running, it's actually running the Python script now. And I'll show you the code in a second. But it's putting the web map from my web app into that template map document that I chose. And then the Python script, you know, it's basically mashed up my web map with all the vector data that I put in my template, and then it's simply just removing the service layers. And so basically there's the output. That only took a few seconds to run. So if you're able to build something like this for your users, you probably look like a hero. And I'm going to just click this here and show you the output PDF. And this is a large format PDF, 26 by 28. It's not what you can see. This is not one of the generic out-of-the-box templates that come with the out-of-the-box printing service. You know, it has these scale bars and an overview data frame and all this custom text. And if you look at the quality of the output here, you can see that this isn't like a pixelated map service. This is all vector data. There's also a reference grid here. You can see these grid lines, and that wasn't in the web app. And I just put that in there to make the point that you could have extra stuff in the template map that's not in the web app. Okay, so let's open this up in Adobe Reader now. Now, in Adobe Reader, I'm able to do, since I have vector data in here, I could actually turn layers on and off. So that's pretty useful. I could also view map coordinates using the geospatial tool. Now, if you see at the bottom right, as I move the mouse around, you could see the location update. And like I said before, I could have also configured this so that I could click on features and it'll actually show the attributes. Okay, so I think that's pretty cool because I'm not like a web developer and I was able to build this without having to write any HTML or JavaScript. Question? The question is, if we use vector tiles, will you be able to turn the layers on and off of the vector tiles? That's a really good question. And exactly. So that's a very good point. So if you're using first off, vector tiles don't print yet. They're not printable. That is coming in either 1.4 or 1.5. Now, the same comment also applies to feature services. When you bring a feature service in, it's going to look, it's vector. It's going to look great. So this, the example I'm showing here, is more applicable to having cached map services. However, there's. Even if you're using vector tiles or feature services, there's still all these other workflows you could do in a printing app, like data-driven pages and building like your dynamic tables example. You could build that all into your printing app as well. So just for the sake of demonstrating, we're just going to use a swapping out tiled map services with service with vector, which is still a pretty common workflow. But thanks, that's a very good comment. Okay, so let's look at the Python script that did this. The very first thing is I get the web map JSON from the web app as a parameter. Now, JSON is the format of the web map. So it contains the full state of the web map. For example, it has references to all the layers, the coordinate system, the extent, the scale, and so on. Now, you don't have to create the JSON. The print widget did it all for me. So remember when I said the print widget was smart? If my script tool has the first parameter with this name, webmap is JSON, the print widget actually gets the webmap JSON for me. So that's like the most complicated part, but you don't have to even think about it. It's all just done for you. Okay, next, I get the template map document. And this is the map, that was the map template from the drop-down list of layouts. And I put these MXDs in a folder registered with the server so that server can access them. And these are the MXDs that have the vector layers staged within them. And so those are the MXDs that I authored myself. And here's where I use the convert webmap to map document function to insert the webmap JSON into the template map document. So that's the part that takes the webmap and just mashes it into my map document. So a map document object is returned from that function, which I can then modify. And like I said, now the webmap from the web app is in my map document. So the map document has the service layers from the web app and the vector layers that I already put in there. Now, this is the really powerful part, because now you could do anything you want with the web map. And in my case, all I'm doing is removing the service layers before I print it. And you know, this is where you could get really advanced and do stuff with data-driven pages and things like that. But just to keep it simple, a lot of people just want to do vector printing. So just for the sake of having a simple example here. So to remove the service layers, I'm just using the isServiceLayer property. Then I export to the PDF to generate an output file. I also hard-coded the parameter to include georeferencing info. And then finally, I use the output PDF as the output parameter of the script, and the print widget will now display the output PDF in the web app for me. Okay, so that's the demo. I want to mention our web map printing tutorials that are in the help, and the tutorials don't use the web app builder. Rather, they're built from scratch using HTML and the JavaScript API. So if you're interested in that development path, go check out those tutorials. And the print task in the JavaScript API works much in the same way as the print widget does in the web app builder. And in the advanced tutorial, you'll be able to do a little bit more stuff, like choose the output format, and then pass extra info into the print service from the web app, for example, whether to include georeferencing info in the output PDF or not. In my demo, I hard-coded that. But you could pass any number of extra parameters to your own print service when you use the JavaScript API. Now, the web app builder doesn't support extra parameters yet, and hopefully that's going to be something that's coming in the future. You'll also be able to do stuff like control which layers are on in the map, and control which layers are on in the legend in the output. That is, a layer can be on in the map and off in the legend, just to show that you could do stuff with the legend in your print service before printing or exporting, which is something that a lot of people want to do. Okay, so that's web map printing. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and talk about something somewhat different. And I'm going to talk about publishing map services now. So we're finished with web map printing. Now we're going to talk about publishing map services, which is a different workflow entirely. And why would you want to automate publishing map services? And The main reason that I find is that users want to script scheduled map service updates, and that's usually the main reason they'll update their feature service every night or something like that. So here's the steps to automate publishing. At if you look at the diagram at the bottom of the slide here, so you start off by referencing a map document. And optionally, a script can also use ArcPy.mapping to modify the MXD before you share it. Secondly, you create an SD draft file. And the SD draft file is a combination of a map document, information about the server, and a set of service properties. And the SD draft file is actually an XML file. And if you want to get really advanced, you could use core Python libraries to crack open the XML and modify the service properties contained within it. For example, changing the service capabilities or enabling caching on your service. And then finally, if you look at the third box on the diagram, two GP tools complete the scripting workflow: stage service and upload service definition. And optionally, once the service has been published, you could call other GP tools from the caching tool set to create and manage caches. So let's quickly walk through a script that publishes map services. So first off, we reference the MXD that we want to publish. Then we specify some variables that we will use when publishing, like our server connection and some metadata properties. Then we create the SD draft. Note the analyze for SD function. It performs the same analysis that the UI does prior to publishing. For example, it looks for performance bottlenecks or errors that would prevent publishing. And if there are no errors, finally we just stage and publish. Now, at the bottom, there's a link to a blog post about updating hosted feature services with Python. And that workflow is a little bit more advanced. So we put the extra info in a blog. So please check that out if you're updating hosted feature services. Now, you could also publish geoprocessing, image, and geocoding services with ArcPy. So that concludes the server component. So back to you, Jeff.
All right, thanks, Jeff.
Talk about Pro.
Okay, so now we're going to bounce again, and we're going to come back over to ArcPy mapping, but this time talk about it in the context of ArcGIS Pro. So here's another shortened URL. And again, Jeff and I take a lot of pride in what we present is all fully available for you, either in the web help or through the other URL I gave you to download samples. Everything is repeatable, and you can do it yourselves back at the office. So what I'm going to do is I'm simply going to click on this URL, and it's going to bring us to a help topic in Pro Help. And the level of effort to move from ArcPy mapping in ArcMap to ArcGIS Pro is relatively simple. But when we talk about moving Python code from ArcMap to Pro, one of the biggest changes is specifically with ArcPy mapping. So if you do a lot of geoprocessing, basic scripts like that, most of that stuff's just going to work inside of Pro, no problem. The times that doesn't work is when we haven't migrated those functions over yet to Pro. But most of the ArcPy.mapping stuff just works. ArcPy.mapping won't work. So I'm telling you, you're going to have to modify your scripts. So what do you have to modify? And that's what this topic is all about. And it's relatively simple, but you're going to have to make changes. Number one, even for geoprocessing, we've moved from Python 2.7, which you get with ArcMap 10.4.1, and with ArcGIS Pro 1.2 or 1.3, which is soon to be released, that is Python 3.4.4. And there are some tools that we make available. There are just some basic out-of-the-box Python tools called Py 2-3 that will just convert your scripts from a Python script format to a Python 3 format. And some of those changes may not even affect you. The number one change that will affect you is the print statement. Print, double quote, hello world, double quote, will not work in 3X. It has to be print, open paren, double quote, hello world, double quote, close paren. It's a function instead of a statement. There's some other changes with numerics and other things like that. So this little utility will just kind of make that change for you. But with ArcPy mapping, a huge change is we renamed the module mapping to MP. And I think we did that for a really, really good reason. When you hear about ArcPy.mapping, or when I hear ArcPy.mapping, I don't know what you think when you hear ArcPy mapping, but when I hear ArcPy.mapping, I think of ArcMap. And I think of everything that I can do with a map document. And when I hear ArcPy.mp, I think of everything that I can do with an ArcGIS project. And that was one of the main reasons why we needed to change the name of the module is you can't run an ArcPy mapping script because 99% of the time you had the map document function to reference an MXD. Well, in Pro, you don't reference an MXD, you reference a project. So instead of map document, it's arcpy.mp.arcgisproject, and you pass in the path to that project or you pass in the keyword current to reference the project currently loaded. Some other changes is that we've moved many of the list functions. Since we had to make this change and since things are different, we figured, you know what, we'll just kind of improve things a little bit more. We'll try and make it a little bit more object-oriented, a little bit more object-friendly. So before with ArcPy mapping, we had all these standalone list functions, ArcPy.mapping, list this, list that, etc. And you always had to pass in as your first parameter the container that you wanted to search, like the map document. Now what we do is we just simply reference the project, and then from the project we can list for maps, and from the map object we can look for layers, right? Or from the layout object we can look for layout elements, as opposed to putting all of those list functions really flat up at the top. So you're just navigating the objects. And let me just show you that. We have an object model diagram here. And there's two ways of entering into ArcPy mapping, either through a layer file on disk, because we want to manipulate its contents, just like with ArcPy mapping, or with ArcPy MP, we want to reference a project. So it would be ArcPy.mp, ArcGIS project, the path. Then once we get to the project, then we use list maps to get maps, and from a map, then we can use list bookmarks, list tables, list layers to get to those objects. And likewise, down at the bottom here, we can also get to layouts from the project, and from the layout, we can get to all these other element types. So the logic is very, very similar. We've just kind of named a couple of things a little bit differently. We may have rearranged some of the objects. But it is really everything that you know about ArcPy mapping is very, very similar. Layer management functions have also moved. So similarly, if you wanted to insert a layer, add a layer, do all that sort of stuff, you did it at the root level of ArcPy mapping. Now you just simply use that same function, but you do it on the map class. Okay, because maps inside of ArcGIS Pro are nothing other than they manage a list of layers and a spatial reference. And so you connect to the map, and then you add layers or remove layers. A real big change, and I think a really exciting change, and you're going to appreciate this between ArcMap and ArcGIS Pro, is we've taken that data frame object, and we've busted it up into three different pieces. So we have a map object, and a map is like what I said, a list of layers and a spatial reference. A map can be displayed in the application either in a map view, which allows you to do basic navigation and panning and zooming, or if you want to see the contents of that map in a layout, then you insert it as a map frame. Now, why did we do this? Because in ArcMap, for example, if you insert a data frame and you set your extent to be very precise, and then you go over to data view and you start panning and zooming, and then you go back to your layout, you've just messed up your extent. So in Pro, we've separated the two. You can open up a map view and navigate all you want. And that same map can be in a map frame that's pointing to the same list of layers, right? But it has its own independent set of extents. Okay? I heard a little clap there. Thank you. And then lastly, we have a camera object. We've introduced a camera object where it's very important we had to do this because we have the whole idea of 2D and 3D in Pro. So not only are we setting a scale and extent, but we can also set a pitch, a roll, and a heading, and that sort of stuff. So we had to expose more properties, and it made sense to do that using this additional object. And then we have a new layout object. Because remember, inside of ArcMap, you had one and only one layout, whether you liked it or not. If you didn't want a layout, we still gave you a layout, right? In Pro, you may not have any layouts, or you may create many layouts. And if you have multiple layouts, then you need to be able to determine which one you're working with, work with the layout object to do export and that. And then applications. I don't know if any of you have watched many of my demos in the past. I'm in the Python window, and I'm turning off a layer, and then I have to, every once in a while, do refresh active view so that I can see that refresh in the application. The way the architecture works in ArcGIS Pro is very different, and everything and anything you do triggers a service that just tells the application to refresh itself. But what's really cool is it doesn't refresh its entire self. It just refreshes the part that got modified. So performance is much, much faster. And then finally, and this is a great segue into what Jeff's about to talk about, is updating data sources in ArcMap is awesome. There's a lot that you can do. And what we learned while designing that experience was there are a bazillion combinations of things that can happen, whether it be workspace types, or you're working with joins, or you're doing all this crazy stuff. And so we decided to change how that works in Pro, and I think this is going to give you also a nice eye into the future in terms of how we may start working with symbology in ArcGIS Pro. So let me just briefly state, we haven't migrated all of ArcPy mapping into Pro. Some things that we haven't tackled yet are symbology. So that's something that we're going to need to jump on. A lot of other things that aren't quite there in the current application, like dynamic legends, we're waiting for that to come along so that we can integrate that into Pro. So just keep looking at our What's New documents, and we'll be posting you on all that new stuff. So Jeff is going to talk about updating data sources in Pro.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. So yeah, as Jeff said, I'm going to talk about scripting migrating 10x documents to Pro. And then after that, I'll talk about updating data sources. So you've gotten your hands on ArcGIS Pro, but you have a lot of ArcMap documents that you want to import into Pro in a batch script. And we have the import document function to do that. The function takes in a path to a map, scene, or a globe document. And the diagram in the code here shows a workflow where we're looping through a folder or a drive or an entire network even and importing each MXD into its own ArcGIS Pro project. So let's look at the code briefly. The first part of the code is just using core Python to loop through a folder and get all the MXDs within it. Then for each MXD, we reference a template APRX, import the MXD into the APRX, then save the project to its own file name. Now the import document function also has this parameter to include the layout or not, and you can see that highlighted in the slide. And this can be useful in workflows where you're importing multiple map documents into a single ArcGIS Pro project. And as Jeff said before, ArcMap, a map document, always had a layout. But sometimes you don't use the layout. You're just working in the data frame. So if there's a case where you're importing like 50 MXDs into a single ArcGIS Pro project, which some people are doing, maybe you don't want 50 layouts. So we have the include layout parameter to do that. And in the diagram in the code here, we're consolidating many different types of 10x documents into a single ArcGIS Pro project. Now let's actually run this code in the Python window in Pro. So what I have here is just a blank ArcGIS Pro project. And I have the Python window open here. Now, the text, the font size in the Python window is really small, so I'm going to actually do some stuff in Notepad just so you could see it better. So this is a script I'm going to run. So I'm going to just copy and paste it. And while that's running, I'm going to tell you what it's doing. In the first line, I'm referencing the currently open ArcGIS Pro project. In the second line, I import an MXD. And then I import another MXD. But note the include layout parameter here. I've set it to false. And then finally, I also import a globe and scene document. So that script finished running. And I'll expand the maps node here. And this brought in all these maps. Well, these were actually data frames in ArcMap, and now they're maps in Pro. And I'll also expand the layouts node here. And it just brought in one layout, as I specified in my script. Okay, so that was importing 10x documents into Pro. Now I'm going to switch gears and talk about updating data sources now. And updating data sources with ArcPy was something you could do in ArcMap, and it's been improved a little bit in Pro. Now one of the classic problems this workflow solves can be seen at the picture at the top left here. For example, your organization may have many projects, tens, hundreds, thousands, even with many thousands of layers. And for whatever reason, your database, it's gone, it's moved, or it's changed. Maybe there was some sort of folder restructuring, or all the data was moved from personal geodatabase to enterprise geodatabase, or your server caught fire. You know, when I worked in tech support, my most exciting day was when my server caught fire, and it was even behind a firewall. And so you need to point all those APRXs to the new database, and that's something you'd want to script, obviously. Now, in Pro, we have a simple function called update connection properties that can be executed either on a project, or you could dig into the project and execute it on a map, a layer, a table, or a layer file. And this function can be thought of kind of like a find and replace. So if you look at the code sample at the bottom here, here I could loop through all the projects in a folder or a drive or even all the projects on your network and do a find and replace from one workspace path to another. And this function also has this useful auto update joins and relates Boolean parameter to automatically update the data sources of joins and relates if the data sources of those joins and relates are in the specified workspace. And something new at Pro is that we expose the entire layer data source object model as a Python dictionary. Now, you'd use this if you want more fine-grained control of what's available in the easy update connection properties function. And it's used for more advanced workflows like changing enterprise geodatabase connection properties or joins and relates properties. And I have some samples on this slide, but let's actually run this in Pro. So I'm going to go back to the project from my last demo where I imported a bunch of stuff into Pro. And I'm going to open up one of these maps. So I'm going to open up the layers map. Everything's broken. You could see the dreaded red exclamation mark there. So why are these all broken? I'm going to go to the layer properties and look at my source tab, and you can see here that this is actually a personal geodatabase layer. And you've probably heard already that personal geodatabase is not supported in Pro. Now this layer, if I go to the Joins tab, also has a join to another personal geodatabase table in the map. So I need to update this map to point to my new file geodatabase. Now, I could obviously do this in the UI, but I'm going to just show you how to do it in a script. And I'm just going to do it on this one map, but this will show you how you could do it if you wanted to do it on a whole bunch of projects. And again, I'm just going to show you what it looks like in Notepad. So I'll just run that, and while that's running, we'll go back to Notepad here and tell you what it's doing. So I'm basically doing a find and replace. And I'm finding all instances of this personal geodatabase and replacing it with my new file geodatabase. And I'm just using a partial part of the path here. I could have put, you know, it would have been more robust actually if I put the whole path to the data, but you could also do partial paths. And you could see that I've also set auto update joins and relates equal to true. So that's also going to fix all the joins and relates in my map. And you could see while I was talking that that actually updated the map. And that's a good point where I didn't have to manually refresh the map like I would sometimes have to do an ArcMap. It just automatically refreshed. If we go back to the Mexico layer properties and go to the source tab, you can see that it's now pointing to my file geodatabase. And if I go to the joins tab, you can see that it also fixed that to point to my point the join to my file geodatabase table. Okay, so that was the easy update connection properties workflow. Let's look at a more advanced workflow where we're going to edit the connection properties dictionary. And, well, here, I'll just tell you what it's doing first before I run it. So first I'm importing the pprint module. Now, pprint, all that does is displays the dictionary in an easy-to-read format. And then I reference the layer that I want to get the connection properties from. I get the connection properties, and then I pprint them. So I'm going to run that. And you can see what the output was here. And this is the connection properties dictionary. So this is the layer's entire data source and join info. Now these dictionaries can actually get quite big and complicated once you start dealing with enterprise geodatabase or joins and relates. So here's our imaginary workflow that we're going to try and tackle right now. Say your boss says that all the hundreds of ArcGIS Pro projects that reference this Mexico feature class and this join table, the foreign key that the join is based on has changed to a new field. So can you go ahead and update all the layers that use that foreign key to the new field, please? Now, when we did this yesterday, people laughed when I said that, because that would be really hard to do in a Python script or a .NET solution. Let alone by hand. Now I said I needed to update the foreign key. Now that's part of the join definition. So you can see the foreign key is pointing to this field here. So what I need to do is write a script that will loop through all my projects, find this foreign key, and change it. And that's actually pretty easy to do. Here's how I access the foreign key in my connection properties dictionary, and that's how I update it. So I'm just going to run this code here. And that updated. And now let's just go see if it actually worked. So I'll go to my layer properties again and go to the join tab. And you can see there's my new foreign key, just like I specified in my script. Okay, so that last example, I admit, was kind of an obscure workflow, but it shows you the power of being able to dig into that connection properties dictionary and change any of the pieces that you want. And that could be really useful for enterprise geodatabase resourcing workflows. And I have some examples of that on this slide here. Now, for example, if you need to change the username of enterprise geodatabase layers, so for example, a user has left and or the username is changed for a whole slew of projects, so you need to dig into all these projects and change the user. So this is how you do it. So here I get the layers connection properties. Then I update the connection properties dictionary with a new username and password. And then I set the connection properties to be the new updated dictionary. And that's it. Now in this next example, I'm going to update the project with a new database by doing a find and replace of partial dictionary key value pairs. So this goes back to the server that caught fire, then you get a new server that has a new name. So first, I define the connection properties that I'm going to search for. And this dictionary has the old database info. Then I define the new connection properties dictionary. And this has the new database info. And finally, I do a find and replace on the project. And that is updating data sources in Pro. And I guess that's it. Jeff, you have a slide about surveys?
We'll
open it up for Q&A.
So you forgot to say that your boss wanted it before the end of the day. Oops, let me... Okay, so we just want you to take the time and fill out a survey. This helps us kind of determine how we did and also determine room size and that sort of stuff. So please take some time and fill out a survey. But we will take some questions. So remember, we bounced back and forth. We covered a little bit of desktop ArcPy mapping and some ideas. We talked about ArcGIS Pro migration. We talked about web map printing and changing data sources. Yes?
Just a quick one about the web map printing. There used to be a small issue with using Bing base maps instead of the Esri ones. Has that been addressed, or it wasn't passing the key in the previous versions? I think it's been addressed in previous JavaScript, but I'm not in charge of the upgrade to JavaScript yet, so I haven't gotten to play in there.
Okay. So the question is using Bing base maps in a web map printing example, in web map printing workflows. And that issue has been resolved, and there's two ways that could have been resolved, and I can't remember which one it was. Either the username password issue is just not an issue anymore, but then we also added this, we also have a parameter where you could pass in credentials to your web map printing workflow that have the credentials for all the secured services that you use in web map printing. But I don't even think you have to do that with Bing anymore. I think that's just a non-issue anymore.
Well, it's usually just a key that needs to be passed.
Yeah. So, you can pass a key in there as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Other questions? Yes?
When is the connection properties coming to map?
When are the connection properties coming where?
Oh,
ArcMap. Okay. It's currently not planned to come to ArcMap. I mean, a lot of the capability.
Answer. I didn't ask yet. I said when.
But I did give you an answer.
No, you didn't answer my question.
Yeah. I said it's probably not coming to ArcMap.
Why not?
Just resources.
I mean, 99% of your users use ArcMap.
I totally understand your question. But right now, our development resources are trying to get functionality into Pro that we can't do that ArcMap can do. So it's back and forth. Any other questions? All right, well, thank you for coming, and enjoy the party this evening.